ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It's Wednesday, December 26, 2018. Welcome, Dave.
Hey, happy last hump day of 2018, Melody.
That's right. Woo!
And what a hump day it was.
Oh, geez. We're going to be going through the market report, talking a little bit more about it after our first segment with Wendy Wilson. But, you know, when you talk about the plunge protection team, and everybody knows it, and you have Mnuchin coming out and saying, hey, you know, and I mean, it's just an incredible what they were able to do today. But hey, it's changed moods and changed the price of gold a little bit. And I don't think I've ever remember the Dow being up this much in one day. But let's go ahead and start with the gold prices today. And I do hope everyone had a great holiday, a great Christmas. And my favorite day of the year is January 2nd. And I'm just a workaholic, and I'm ready to get back to the work routine. But for now, gold is down $3.80 at $1,266. Silver still maintained its $15 high today. We had it's up 27 right now at $15.10. Platinum was up $10 at $8.01, with palladium up 15 at $12.67. The USDX today was higher, 0.44, at 97.04. Crude oil was up big today, up 4.06, $4 today at 46.59. I didn't have a chance to follow the markets, and when Dave, when we connected to do the program today, he says, things turned around. I said, yeah, I know, it was up 600 points. He says, no, it's up 1,086 for the Dow. Still below 23,000 at 22,878. We'll still have to see if it's on, though, for the S&P and the Dow to be on for the worst month since 31, I believe.
Yep.
Even after this reversal. So still having a bad month. The NASDAQ was up 361, almost 6%. Do you ever remember a time when these markets were as high as they are today?
Well, clearly the the biggest single day point gain ever for the Dow at over 1,000. Percentage-wise, I don't think so, but it's still got to be up there, I would think, in the top, perhaps even top five of percentage gains in a day. Looking for that as we speak.
Yeah, 5% on the Dow. The NASDAQ was up almost 6%, 5.84%, up 361 points, 6,554. And the S&P was up 116, also up almost 5% at 2,467. You'd have to see the 10-year yield rise today. It did, 2.80%, up 0.05. European Asian markets, but the emotion still driving the market. That didn't have a chance to catch up. Earlier today, it was at 2. Today, it is at later this afternoon, it is up 4.
VIX Volatility Index, Melody, just under 30, down a little more than 6 from Monday, or surprisingly down 17% for the day. But still up there in, at the highest it's been since, I think, mid-February.
But it certainly takes the news off any bad news. And it certainly, and we'll talk all about this. I want to get to Wendy Wilson today, but an incredible day for the markets. And I did want to make note that they did start reversing. They were negative earlier in the day, the markets were. And I wanted to make a note that they really started moving. The European markets closed at 11, and you really did start seeing it just turn around right after those markets closed. So, plunge protection team at its finest. And what we have at our finest, the finest in herbs, is Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody, and hello, Dave.
Hey there.
Hope everybody had a great Christmas and they're all rested and ready to go. I thought today we would talk about vetting the diagnosis. A lot of times, Well, we report on diagnoses before in the medical community. They could be wrong as much as 20% of the time, your doctor. So we tend to think this means that patients who have a serious health problem are misdiagnosed with a different condition. We rarely think that patients could be told they have a serious health problem when they do not. So either way, the misdiagnosis is a problem. So due to the likelihood of being misdiagnosed, a lot of hospitals are adopting computer programs or artificial intelligence programs, hoping to reduce the error margin. So if you have 10 people looking for a diagnosis right now, at least two of them will be misdiagnosed, and you don't want to be one of those two people. So a second and maybe even a third opinion is going to be necessary. So patients today have more information available online, so they can do a lot of their health researches and find important questions they need to ask their doctor and hunt for the right answers. So we're going to take a look at this area of medicine that seems to be struggling with misdiagnosis to the point of an epidemic level. And what I mean by that is there's an artificial epidemic that's been reported to be happening. Recently, researchers in Australia at the National University reported that there is an artificial epidemic of thyroid cancer. So in their report that got published in the October 2018 Journal of Clinical Oncology, they used the term overdiagnosing rather than misdiagnosing. So just this one artificial epidemic is really costing billions of dollars, and patients are getting unnecessary treatments. So the epidemic is they're told they have thyroid cancer. That would be kind of scary, don't you think, if your doctor told you that?
Yeah, it certainly would be.
Right. So we're going to get to the reason why this is happening, but a lot of unnecessary treatments. It's costing $300 million U.S. dollars a year in Australia. They project the same amount for 2019. So depending on the stage of cancer they're telling the patient they have, their treatments vary. They may be put on hormone therapy, radioactive iodine treatments, may even have surgery where they remove part or even all of their thyroid, their lymph nodes, and maybe even a neck dissection. Obviously, radiation and chemo. So what would be the symptoms if you did have thyroid cancer? Well, you may feel a lump in your neck. You may have swelling there in the neck area, pain right in the front area of your neck where the thyroid is. You may have persistent hoarseness or a voice change, and you could have difficulty swallowing and have a persistent cough that's not due to a virus or bacterial infection. So according to Dr. Shahal Doe, he's the researcher over there in Australia, he says this artificial epidemic of thyroid cancer has really been increasing threefold over the last 25 years. He said one component that patients may not be aware of is that thyroid cancer has a low death rate. Really low, he says. Thyroid tumors, he says, doesn't usually progress to that clinical form of cancer. And according to him, he says, there's like 2,500 new cases of thyroid cancer that gets diagnosed each year in Australia. We're going to take a guess what the rate is here in the United States. 53,900 new cases, with a majority of them being women, around 40,900, and then about 1,000 of them being children or teenagers. Wow. Here's a quote from Dr. Dye. He says, now he's the professor of clinical epidemiology at Australian National University. He also is head of research school of population health. He said, overly meticulous examinations are detecting the condition in the early stages, resulting in unnecessary surgeries. He said active monitoring rather than intervention is appropriate in most of these cases. He had a comparison. He said thyroid problems like this, if you compare it to prostate problems, he says, what happens when you go to your urologist and he says you got a little swelling, your PSA numbers are up a little bit? They don't jump to surgery and radiation. They say, we're going to monitor this condition for a while. And he says that's exactly what they should be doing with the thyroid issue as well. And he says that, you know, because surgical procedures do have consequences, and thyroid cancer surgery is no different. He says patients are going to have to be put on lifelong medicines like thyroid replacement hormone therapy. They're also going to be risky, he said, a lot of complications to the surgery. You can get nerve damage, or you can damage surrounding glands. And he suggests that, you know, the people, the public, he says, educate yourselves about this condition so you can avoid the unnecessary and costly treatment and risk. He goes on to say that people with this type of thyroid cancer, get this, can sometimes live normal lives and have normal life expectancy and die from another cause like heart disease or breast cancer. So you're not going to die from your thyroid cancer, he says. There is really no real point for intervention in benign cases when there's really no physical problem, he says. So good stuff to understand. We really need to be vigilant whenever we get a diagnosis. We don't get upset. Don't panic. Just research. You know, do your homework. Really impressed about with this study that they did, they analyzed autopsy data of thyroid cancer patients for all over the world over a 60-year period. They had a lot of data to look over. They said some regions had higher than other occurrence of thyroid cancer, but he said it was the data from the 1960s that gave them the projection of the threefold increase. He stated that thyroid cancer has remained unchanged since the 60s, and it's really... the incidence and number of the cases is being driven up by the increased detection tests. So there are tests, he says, but are they really that accurate, or should you be, you know, jumping into invasive procedures right away? That's that error margin again on tests of 20%. So blood tests, MRI, CAT scans, ultrasounds, needle biopsies, they do have an error margin built into them. People don't realize it. What were you going to say, Melanie?
Well, you know, I know so many women who take thyroid medication.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we're going to get to what the real deal is in a minute.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we should connect the dots. That's a good question you raised. Why is there such a problem with thyroid these days and a lot of women with? There's a lot of thyroid malfunction. You got hyper and hypothyroidism and all the in between, and in some instances it really can be traced to a lot of the hormones and other unnatural substances that are in our foods that's really disrupting the gland. So with the lack of organic nutrients, the thyroid gland is not going to be functioning like it should. And one expert said that he contributed thyroid disease to eating foods that contain thyroid-suppressing toxins, mineral depletion of your food, and also prescription medications. So there's this significant connection. When the thyroid function declines, get this, your cholesterol level increases. Did you know that?
No, I did not. I did. Well, did you know that, Dave?
I did. Mm. Only
did.
Because it happened to me about 15, maybe 20 years ago.
Wow. Well, the Journal of Nutritional Environmental Medicine in 2001 printed this statement. They said, it's well documented since the 1930s. When thyroid function declines, cholesterol rises because active thyroid hormones is required for the conversion of cholesterol into your youth hormones to help you live. So instead, doctors, what do? They put patients on cholesterol drugs, which is one of the most prescribed drugs after painkillers, end of quote. So that's not going to fix it, putting you on a cholesterol drug.
No, and you know what I've read where cholesterol, didn't they change the readings for cholesterol to more people?
If you look at other regions of the world, they have different lifestyle and different diets. They have higher cholesterol than Americans have, and they're perfectly fine. It's about the diet. If you get a lot of amino fatty acids, omega-3s, you can chug down a whole bottle of olive oil and your cholesterol level will be fine. So, and according to the Journal, again, of Nutritional Environmental Medicine, thyroid disease is really a lack of natural minerals in your foods, especially natural iodine. They said this, studies indicate that inadequate iodine intake will result in a condition that promotes thyroid tumor growth. So, and if you recall, we've talked about since the early 1900s, they've started analyzing nutrition and foods. So from the 1920s in that area, 1930s, we're eating three times as much food as our predecessors, but our food has 50% less nutrition in it.
True.
Yeah. So, and one thing I think is important, because, you know, we were talking about this artificial pandemic in Australia. Countries like the UK and Australia, they have the universal health insurance levy by their government. Now, in Australia, their tax insurance coverage starts at 10% of their income, and in UK, it's 20%. Now, people in both these countries tend to be complaining of the quality of care, long waits, no flexibility. So if you were in England, for instance, Melanie, and you had to go see a bone specialist and you got an appointment and they gave you an appointment, you don't get to pick the appointment date and time. They give it to you. You got to be there. And let's say something came up, you had a death in the family, or you had to be somewhere for work and you couldn't make the appointment. Oh, well, you start all over and go to the back of the line. Yeah. So they complain about that lack of flexibility there. They also can't get a lot of alternative products like we have here in the United States. The UK, actually, they're prohibited about sharing natural therapies amongst each other. It's against the law. However, over there, you can get as much cholesterol-lowering meds as you want and thyroid drugs, all you need. So in this age, the motto to keep the population, you know, it indicates that if you're uninformed, it's going to be possible that you're going to be taken advantage of by modern medicine. So if you want to feed your thyroid, there's a way to do it, because it's out of balance is basically it. When your thyroid's out of balance and it doesn't have the natural iodine it uses for a food source to regulate hormones for the body, then you're going to have a myriad of problems, including sleep apnea and cholesterol going up. So my experience is black walnut will have your highest source of natural iodine. I'm not talking about the walnuts on the bake aisle at the store. It's not the nut itself. It's the substance between the nut and the outer hull that has the iodine. And then I like to use mullein to support the gland and soothe it, because it's kind of exhausted, and then ginseng for energy and support of energy for the gland. So those three things, black walnut, mullein, and Siberian ginseng, remember those three things. Your thyroid will love you. Love you.
That's always nice to have your organs love you.
Yeah, well, it's all about getting back into balance so it functions, you know. So it does make hormones for neurotransmitters and other things. So thyroid, they're finding, does more than they thought.
Give us your contact info. We're just about out of time.
Well, we are. thepowerherbs.com or 866-229-3663. We're still having our 35% off through the end of this month. 866-229-3663. Thanks, you guys. Talk to you soon.
Thank
Bye.
You, Wendy. Have a great new year. See you in 2019. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in just a few moments.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. We got lots of bargains here at Discount Gold and Silver. We want to blow out the inventory for the end of the year, so give us a call as the inventory is constantly changing. We have 90% silver, great deals on that. We have some BU, 90% silver, and a lot of other good deals on gold. $20 gold pieces are still the, you know, the investment of the century. I mean, it's a no-brainer. You should be backing up your trucks because the premiums between bullion coins that's beginning to spread, they range anywhere, you know, like 61s are still $70 above bullion coins. And remember, we were selling them for the same price as gold bullion coins, and we can't do that anymore no matter how I adjust the premiums on both or the cost on both. So now's the time to do it. Get just because we had the kind of day that we had. And Dave, you brought up an interesting stat. The market was up 1,000, and they say it's the biggest one. It's biggest rise by points, but percentage wise, you have an interesting statistic there.
Yeah, it's true. Among the top, it looks like the sixth and fifth highest days ever was a 10.9 and 11.1% increase, both occurring in October of 2008. And of course, the three largest percentage point changes occurred 1929, 1931, and 1933. So,
upside or downside?
well, to the upside then. Mm-hmm. But certainly, in the throes or just before the Great Depression.
Yes.
So, very
interesting numbers and percentage. Comparisons. And again, how many times do we talk about the comparisons? Numbers going back to 2008, 2007, going back to the Depression. These are parallels for a reason, because they are the same things are happening. The situations that we're in are the same. And it's the day of reckoning. Different years, but Dave, different reasons. But markets are behaving in the same manner. And we saw the volatility today. Earlier in the day, the Dow traded 222 points lower, erasing a 282-point gain. You had the S&P 500. That also dipped lower before rebounding. Peter Cardillo, he's the chief market economist at Spartan Capital Securities. He said, the problem is that the President Trump continues to create a lot of uncertainty. I don't buy that. I believe the markets. I believe there's a lot of unhealthy numbers in the market. And yeah, he might add a little bit to that. I don't know you can blame Trump for the uncertainty. But he's the one that was out there saying, hey, you better go out there and buy on the dip. And of course, that's what everybody did. They all bought on the dip. And some interesting numbers. You had the S&P was down a little over 20% from an intraday record high that was set on September 21st. So
crazy. If Einstein were alive today, I think he would amend his famous quote about insanity. It would certainly be be focused on these markets of late. You know, the plunge in stocks on Monday, Christmas Eve, came after Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin held calls with CEOs of major U.S. banks over the weekend and issued a statement saying this: the banks all confirmed ample liquidity is available for lending to consumer and business markets. Now, we'll talk more about that in a few minutes, but Frank Twa, who's managing director at Soho Capital, said this morning, this call was absolutely unnecessary, and in terms of their ability to communicate to the markets, they're losing it. They, meaning presumably Mnuchin. Tross said the Treasury call begs the question whether Mnuchin has no idea of what he's doing or if there actually is a liquidity crisis. Interesting thought, although the numbers don't quite bear that out yet. If the latter option is the case, you know, Twal questioned why it didn't come up in the Fed's recent minutes, which is certainly a good point, Melody.
Well, it wouldn't. They wouldn't announce that.
No. But you know, in terms of transparency, you know, the concern now in the market is actually that the Treasury's out of touch with what's going on. He said, you know, this is all taking place amid an ongoing government shutdown that started last week and right now has no end in sight.
You know, what's interesting is Monday the markets were down over 600 points. So we came and it was down another 200, so that's 800, and then it came back 1,000. So really, it had a lot of volatility. But, you know, it seems, and you have Trump out there saying buy on the dips, you know, it's a great time to be buying. You have Mnuchin, you know, doing these stupid things. And then we have President Trump. I think a lot of the news stations were focused on his comment when he was talking to a 7-year-old little girl and asked her if she still believed in Santa Claus, that, you know, at her age is marginal or something, you know, to those lines, and the media came all undone. And whether you approve of that or you don't approve of it, he certainly moved on to change the media's report that the president and the first lady made a secret visit to Iraq. And this is the first to the war zone since he's been in office, and I think the first time for a first lady to visit a war zone. So that certainly erased any more reporting from the mainstream media as far as, you know, from a little girl to the government shutdown. I mean, they don't even talk about the government. I mean, that just goes to show you it's no big deal that they shut down the government. Unfortunately, they shut down and take paychecks from people who work, that live paycheck to paycheck, instead of the people who create these problems, like the politicians. If they shut down government, they should shut them down too, on some degree, you know, take away their paychecks, take away their, and so they can at least come to, you know, get something done. But Dave, sometimes people think that it's better that they don't get anything done because they just screw it up anyway. But so we're basically officially in a bear market.
Or were, you know. We
haven't seen the final
numbers. Market today. But picture us announcing this news to you, ladies and gentlemen, as if it were yesterday.
Well, no, I mean, let's look at it. You know, they talked about we were in the market. Individual stocks are still down. I mean, the Dow is up, you know, big deal. There's 30 stocks in the Dow. What about all the other shares out there? And what about all the buying from, there was a report today. Let's see if I can find this here. But the article was all about your corporates buying back their shares.
Of course.
So again, it's not a matter whether we're in a bear market or a bull market, ladies and gentlemen. It's about looking at the fundamentals under these numbers. And the fundamentals that we talk about here every day, from the debt of the government, how can you be in a bull market when you have a government shutdown? How can you come out of a bear market when you have a government that's not functioning? How can you come out of a bear market when the fundamentals is all corporate to multinationals buying back their shares? How can you have a bull market when you have, you know, all the bad numbers that they produced? Housing falling apart. They were able to pull back the, and I'm going all over the page, Dave, so, you know, just break in whenever you want to focus on any one particular thing. But so, again, it's not about whether we're in a bear, whether we're in a bull, whether we're in recession or whether we're not. We're looking to the fundamentals of what's moving our economy. And are the numbers there really to support it? And if the numbers aren't there to support it, then what can we truly expect? And because it's all about the fundamentals. And that's what keeps it simple. That's what keeps it basic, because that's the reality of things. You can distort these numbers by the plunge protection team bringing in 1,000 points to the stock market. What changed? What positive changed to show that type of increase? Absolutely nothing. We still don't have a trade agreement, and I think we're going to talk about China. Didn't they put on some additional tariffs, Dave?
No, they actually decreased.
They did decrease, but we have a farm bill. I was reading through the farm bill that they signed last week. I mean, it really is hard to, and it's all this volatility that leads to uncertainty. But
well, in the next segment, we talk again a little bit, some more statistics and insights into the impact that this computerized, algorithmic-based market trading is having, and could be responsible in part, if not largely, for the quickness and the degree to which the market jumped up today, and probably jumped down right before the Christmas holiday. So it's something that we'll get to after the next break.
You know, the federal government, we added another $1.3 trillion to the debt since last December 25th. And these are the numbers that are published by the U.S. Treasury. So again, nothing is cut. What is improving? Where is that money going? The Census Bureau estimates that there were, and again, I'm rounding in numbers, 127 million households in the United States in 2018. That means that $1.3 trillion, Christmas to Christmas, increase in the debt equals approximately almost $11,000 per household. Do you think the households just in this last year can give up $11,000 to the government? Don't think so. And do you think they probably don't even have enough to put that on their credit cards? You have economic growth that is slowing around the world. This is from the Washington Post. You know, it seemed like the global economy was humming until recently. Builders in the United States are erecting fewer single-family homes. German factories are sputtering. And in China, retail sales are growing at their slowest pace in 15 years. You know, the sudden slowing has fed into a global financial sell-off, you know, to where we've seen the stock indexes for one reason or another drop more than 20%. Political turmoil is at the highest in the U.S. and other advanced economies, epitomized by the partial shutdown of the U.S. government and street protests in France. It doesn't seem like things are great. And usually when you have good economies, people are happy, aren't they, Dave?
That's what I hear.
So, again, it doesn't seem that things are doing good. Again, numbers for recession next year have increased was it Larry Summers, who raised the chances of recession to 60%? And so it's really just a lot of noise that we saw that the Dow come back over 1,000 points. I'm sure Wall Street's happy, and those that are holding 401ks, their pensions, their retirements, I'm sure they're all happy. And I guess that was the goal of the plunge protection team today, to make sure that everyone is happy. Let's report on some good news today. Retail is having the best holiday season in 6 years. Is that correct, Dave?
That is correct.
And so we had sales in the U.S. from November 1st through Christmas Eve. They were up 5.1% to more than $850 billion. This is according to MasterCard Spending Pulse. MasterCard also said online sales during that time frame were up 19.1% from a year ago. We still have consumer confidence. They remain strong, which led to the robust retail sales. Apparel sales were up nearly 8% from November 1 through December 24th, and that's really their best growth since 2010. Home improvement spending, that was up too.
That's true. Analysts say that, companies that sell apparel have done a better job this year managing inventory and keeping production assortments fresh, but obviously they're still going to be losers in that category. Meanwhile, big box retailers like Target and Walmart have invested in their websites, and in addition to what they're doing in stores, try to grab more sales online, but the majority of purchases are still happening on Amazon. And speaking of which, Amazon announced this morning it's had a record-breaking holiday season, with the company adding tens of millions of Amazon Prime subscribers, in its words, while also selling millions of Amazon devices worldwide. Now, one of Amazon's goals has been to sell customers their own products and devices, but larger than that, Amazon's bigger goal is to convince these shoppers to subscribe to their other services, especially Prime Video. Well, numbers apparently show they've accomplished that in a major way this holiday season. Amazon was taking a whopping 81% of internet sales from December 1 to 19. That, according to Edison Trends, which tracks the market share of online retailers. Now, not surprisingly, and sadly to some extent, a sector that continues to struggle within retail is department stores, even with the boost, other companies are seeing. Sales at U.S. department stores were down over 1%. From November 1st through Christmas Eve.
Well, we're going to be heading into break here in just a few seconds. When we get back, is it time already for another Brevity is Golden? We're going to talk about top 10 apartment sales in New York City. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We got a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about the market trading on autopilot. We're going to talk about the privacy bill and a lot of other things. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen.
Tell me again tonight. Each and every heart is
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 800-375-4188. You know, we kind of were all over the place in the second segment. We're in the third segment today, and it is important to let you know that gold did rise to six-month highs today. And again, all the reasons that we talked about in the previous segment. And so we're seeing more and more folks heading towards the safe haven metal, even as the dollar rose today and stocks went higher. At the high today, spot gold rose 0.8% to 1278 per ounce. It touched its highest since June 18th. And so it's pretty exciting to see some movement, something. I'm really excited about silver. It's really nice. I hope silver can maintain that $15 an ounce because it is just so way underpriced, Dave.
Yeah, you know, more and more analysts and market observers of gold are saying that they're near-term constructive. It's a term that's saying that, you know, in the near term, and, you know, obviously these things change on a daily basis, but usually monthly. There are concerns about global growth in 2019, about the geopolitical uncertainties that Melody mentioned, and, you know, the Trump's continued attack on the Fed, how long the government shutdown will continue, trade war with China. So spot gold is up over 4% for the month so far. That puts it on track to have its best December in about 10 years. Gold prices are testing the current key resistance at 1274. Breaching this level convincingly would push the price toward 1286, at least on the near-term basis, which Kedia Commodities in India said. India, obviously, one of the largest purchasers of gold. We believe that 1274, 1286 are a start at a minimum. Given what we're seeing now, gold should shoot up significantly higher than what the more conservative outfits are saying, Melody. Mm-hmm.
I was just getting this report and something about a massive $64 billion into the markets. The corporate pensions did, perhaps a reason why we saw the numbers that we saw today. So let's go ahead and go to your brevity, Golden.
It's true.
Boy, you know, I've been shut down for a day, and already I've lost my radio.
It happens quickly.
Brevity is gold.
Just like gold prices and silver prices shooting high. If you blink, you miss it.
Well, it was just an exciting day to see prices rise. I ended up working Monday and wrote quite a few deals, even though we were closed, people purchasing gold and silver. And of course, then today, there was a catch up from yesterday as people couldn't buy and people taking advantage because they know what's coming. So it's been a hectic day. So it's good to be back into the groove, and we're going to be going into the groove of Brevity is Golden. And I think this week's edition day features on housing costs. Is that correct?
Well, it is. You know, from time to time, Melody, we like to share these crazy stories and egregious statistics about income equality or the lack thereof, you know, in the U.S. and other countries. You know, for example, we've talked several times this year about the gross inequities in last year's individual and corporate tax cuts and how the vast majority of those benefits are going to the top 1% of taxpayers. Well, this Christmas season, here's another symptom that the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting, well, let's just say they're not getting any richer. You know, the housing market for wealthy folks in New York City has always been a haven and marvel, especially now that Donald Trump is president, who obviously is a large real estate developer in that city. And in 2018, the sale of the top 10 apartments there fetched over $500 million. The high point was a $73.8 million deal for a duplex penthouse and a new tower designed by Robert Stern. You know, that's down 26% from the record in 2014, when a penthouse on 57th Street with views of Central Park sold for just over $100 million. Poor Robert Stern and his buyers. Melody, here are the top 10 apartment sales in New York City in 2018. 10, $42 million, 9, $42 million at two different locations, 8, $43.5 million, another one for just about the same. You got number 6, $50 million at 15 Central Park West, $54 million on 57th Street, $56 million on Vestry Street, $59 million for West 24th Street penthouse, $62 million for 520 Park Avenue, which is number 2, and at number 1, as we mentioned, $73.8 million for 520 Park Avenue. Now, 8 of the top 10 sales were heavily discounted. One apartment at 157 West 57th took a $17 million price cut before it sold. Poor sellers. Lucky buyers, too, I guess. Everything's relative, isn't it? Now, if you take the $74 million that the number one apartment sale brought in, the $73.8 million, you could hypothetically buy 534 homes in Des Moines, Iowa, where the average home cost is $138,400. Well, that sort of puts life in perspective at the top, doesn't it, Mel? You know, ladies and gentlemen, enjoy the upcoming New Year's. Hopefully you don't think too much about that. But in any case, that is this week's Brevity is Golden.
You know, it's really, when you think about the housing in this country, the housing is so, we don't have any affordable housing. And, you know, that's going to peak out, and that's going to be, you know, it's going to break one of these days. And it's just another problem that this country faces in the near future. And but let's kind of switch gears now and look at a topic that we've been talking more and more about. And this is the computerized trading. Behind the broad, swift market slide of 2018 is there's a new reality, and it's like roughly 85% of all trading is on autopilot. And of course, that being said, it's controlled by machines and models, passive investing formulas. You have creating an unprecedented trading herd that moves in unison, and it's blazingly fast. So let's repeat that figure, 85%. So the market has grown up during the long bull market and hasn't until now been seriously tested by a prolonged downturn. And since speaking in last September, the S&P or since peaking in late September, the S&P 500 index of U.S. stocks has fallen almost 20%. The S&P is down 15% in December alone, and it just isn't stocks. You have crude oil was above $75 a barrel in October. By Christmas Eve, it's below 43. Monday was the worst Christmas Eve for the Dow Jones Industrial Average in its history. No Santa Claus.
Yeah, bah humbug. To many investors, the sharp declines are symptoms of the modern market sensitivities. You know, just as cheery sentiment about the future of big technology companies drove gains through the first three quarters of the year, so too have shifting winds brought the market lower in the fourth quarter. Today, these quantitative hedge funds, you know, those that rely on computer models rather than research and intuition, account for roughly 29% of trading in the stock market. 29%. I imagine. I'm not sure if that's a number of trades. That's what I'm guessing it's weighted in as opposed to dollars. If it were dollars, it'd even be more incredible. That's according to the TAB Group. You know, 29% share has more than doubled since 2013. They now trade more than retail investors and everyone else. That's astounding. Add to that passive funds, index investors, high-frequency traders, market makers, and others who aren't buying because they have a fundamental view of a company's prospects. That's where you come up with the 85% of trading volume that Melody mentioned. You know, there's this guy, Marco Kalanovich of J.P. Morgan, Leon Cooperman, who's a billionaire stock picker. He said, electronic traders are wreaking havoc in the markets. Melody.
And you know what? You know, these algorithms that automatically buy and sell based on preset inputs, I mean, they're dumping stocks and contributing to the recent slides. Again, you know, they don't pay attention to fundamentals, but I do believe fundamentals do come into play. But the speed and the magnitude, human beings can't react as fast as these algorithms or as violently. Among the traders today are computers that they buy and sell on models and passive funds that seek only to hold the same securities as everyone else does. You have bankers and brokers, once a ready source of buying and selling, have retreated. Today, when the computers start buying, everyone buys. When they sell, everyone sells. The market of 2018 is a creation years in the making and would be hard to quickly unwind given how much is now baked into the system.
Yeah, you know, troubles in financial markets rather than in global economies best explain the recent market losses. That's according to Michael Hinsey, who's CEO of London-based CQS. Hinsey says the market's new structure, featuring less trading by investment banks and more by algorithmic-focused funds, has reduced the ease with which investors can get in or out of the markets. As a result, he says, normal year-end nervousness has been ramped up, amplified in his words, and selling that in the past would have resulted in measured losses leading to deep drops. Now, markets were remarkably, you know, low-key or placid in recent years, even as, you know, machine trading came to dominate, suggesting that these approaches didn't cause problems during the bull market or even contributed to the market's extended calm, approaching 10 years. Now, one reason the dynamic might have changed, many of the trading models use momentum as an input. So when markets turn south, they're programmed to sell, and they sell in mass. If prices drop, many are programmed to sell even more, compounding the problem quickly. Now, the robots apparently didn't trigger the decline, but they devoured a stew of red signals in the second half of the year.
And, you know, as I mentioned earlier in the program, these signals include a slowdown in growth in Japan, China, Europe, the U.S. The U.S. is moderating, too. And there's also the end of a decade of easy money. In late September, we've seen the Fed push interest rates above the rate of inflation for the first time in a decade. And these are how the markets are reacting. The ECB confirmed it would end its $3 trillion bond buying program. You have Japan that's looking to cut back. There's a decline in growth of corporate profits. We can't forget about the volatile politics. in parts all over the world. And all of the automated selling has landed in a market ill-prepared for it. A sell-off could start simply like in 2008, but this has its own gravity. And it could much more easily start another financial crisis. And we're going to be writing, Dave, you're going to be writing a little bit more about this alarming practice in our blog this Friday.
Yes, I will. I am.
You are.
Look for it, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, and they can go to the website and sign up at dgscoins.com. And, of course, go to the website and sign up for the weekly newsletter. If you do that, then you will also get the blog that it usually comes out Friday or Saturday.
Awesome. You know, just over a year ago, Melody, the notion of Congress passing a consumer privacy law was simply laughable. Now the tech giants that once said rules would break their business, they want Congress to draft bills. Google CEO, for example, Sundar Pichai, told Congress at a recent hearing that the search giant supports legislation. He's the latest tech exec to agree that a national privacy policy is needed.
As long as they can design it.
well, that indeed. They're gearing up their lobbyists now to start working with the congressional staffs. Yeah. You know, and Democrats now in charge of the House are itching to make good on their promise to slap some rules on big tech after a year of scandals. Tech giants have made their fortunes peddling users' personal data. You know, broader public recognition of how powerful their data is and dangerous in the wrong hands. There's also a growing distrust in social media and tech companies, and, you know, that's given Congress more leverage to put in place new regulations, you know, even, you know, in an administration focused in general on deregulation.
But isn't it a day too late? I mean, what can they actually do? What would they actually accomplish?
Yeah.
I mean, the privacy.
Time will tell.
Yeah. And time is telling us that we're out of time for today's program. So, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us today. And remember, for all your gold and silver coin needs, give us a call at Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. I'll be back tomorrow with Butch. And until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye bye.
I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy